Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Oh, hello and welcome. I'm Morgana. This is my husband, Devin.
And I'm here too.
Yes, you are. And I'm really excited about today's show. We are going to bring in a couple of people that I adore and admire, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, we're going to start with what's going on right now. Anything special?
What is going on right now? That's a great question. The cats are fighting in the other room. Every time I see that opening introduction and that picture of us dancing West Coast Swing at the U.S. Open, I can't help but knowing, without question, it's not even a guess, really, that without question, I was the worst dancer
in
the whole building.
I have this on video for both the event and the rehearsal, and actually, you were really good.
I was, but this was still the best dancers in the world, and I am not on, like, if you were to make a list, like a timeline of the best dancers of the world and then place me somewhere, I would be on the end of the row. I'm not apologizing, by the way.
I was going to agree and drive home the point. The U.S. Open West Coast Swing, it's the Olympics of swing dance, with all the best dancers either there or watching from around the planet. And it's every year, it starts on Thanksgiving and goes for 4 days, ending Sunday night. So it was supposed to be this last weekend. And we had bought our tickets last year because we've drunk the swing dance Kool-Aid. And it was like one of just the worst pandemic lockdown moments of 2020 for me. Just, it really drove home the loss of our friend, our dance teacher, who was the head judge at the U.S. Open and trained all these top dancers and was also just the sweetest guy, and just missing the contact, dancing with strangers, learning every time you do it. It's a very kind community where we're obviously baby beginners and people are nice to us anyway. Very, very different from my experience back in my ballet days. So it's a very up and down time where there are these really sad things. And then it feels sort of like the earliest days of spring. If we were to take like the calendar, the solar calendar out of it and talk about, you know, how winter is this lockdown, shut in kind of protective cocooning defense against the elements. That's what 2020 has felt like. And I'm seeing new signs of life. Like in the last week, we've been having a request for Devin to bring back his how to travel the world for free program.
Right. That's true.
And we're also getting inquiries about Devin's mystical solutions to modern love.
That's true too.
I'm going back to Asia next year.
And we'll talk more about that. Yes?
Yeah.
Because that's pretty cool.
At least once.
That's really conversation big. Worthy.
That actually ties in with our guest. One of the things I'm going to do in Asia is something I haven't done before. And so it's like, you know, when things are so dark and so cold, just like the hardest days of winter when I was in college on the East Coast, February is the worst. The snow isn't fun anymore, and it's not snow, it's gray ice. And that's when the life starts to show its signs of coming back. And I feel that's where we are now.
So I have to say, part of this introduction sounds a little bit like some sort of bleak Chekhov novel. That's why I love you, because I was going to say that being the worst dancer in the room actually, to me, connects to this bigger picture of the crazy, sexy midlife love thing, is that you could get up, make a clown of yourself, and nobody cares. That's like, I think maybe the chief thing is, not only do I not really care about what people are thinking, I think the bigger picture is that nobody, you recognize that really nobody else is paying attention to you either.
That is the greatest thing about this time of life, is you realize nobody right. cares what you do, because they're all thinking about themselves anyway.
Right. No, and it's just the acknowledgement that I'm so wrapped up in somebody not noticing me that I'm not noticing them, which I thought was kind of really makes a whole lot of sense.
But I notice you.
I know you do. And that's why we have this whole, you know, I love you thing that is happening. It's part of our world.
I think the definition of love is that the things that would be terminally annoying to somebody else is just adorable when you're in love. It's something to laugh about. And I give Devin lots of material to laugh about.
Yes, no, that is true. That is true. I was wondering if the cold thaw to the single blade of grass poking up in the dark night of the dead of winter.
Well, again, I was raised by Russians.
Right. No, this is true. So in fairness, you were, you know, precisely. Like, I understand that. I've read Chekhov. So that all sort of makes...
I'm grieving for my life, Devin.
The good news is, it's just not going to be dark all that long as we head into the cold,
dark,
somber winter.
Terminally.
Right, as the leaves, every single last one falls from the tree of life, dead on the ground below.
I love you.
So how are we now going to segue?
That's the real challenge.
Right, that's the challenge. Segue? How are we going to spring to move from this, you know, to this sort of moroseness?
Imagine there's a couple in the world that's a little less morbid than we are.
Right.
But lots of fun.
Indeed.
Professionally, they are mentor coaches. And so this will be boring to everybody on the planet except those of us who are in the coaching profession. There is, in fact, and this will amaze you to know, there is actually a governing body of the coaching profession. So that even though any totally unqualified person on the planet can call themselves a coach and open up shop, real coaches are governed by the International Coach Federation. So if you're shopping for a coach, you want to find somebody who is accredited, somebody who actually can help you, knows what they're doing, knows how to actually coach. So I have two of been there since the beginning, real bona fide mentor coaches. My friend Michael is, in my opinion, one of the founders of the coaching profession. There wasn't always a thing called life coach. Somebody had to name that. And Michael harkens back to the time when that was being created. And Michael's wife, Carly, is not only is she a master certified coach, an MCC, which is the highest ranking that I know of recognized by the International Coach Federation. There may be something else, but she's actually the one who trains and tests the other coaches, including the other master certified coaches. So, they're the real thing. And that's not why we invited them. But I wanted to put it out there who they are, because I think it's really worth acknowledging. Also, for all my women friends who are tuning in, all of you super high-powered, overachiever, smarty-pant, top of your industry women looking for love, we have somebody like that. And there's so much nonsense out there about settling and why you aren't going to be finding love. And And I know the hurt because I lived in it for decades and I have a lot of friends out there who are feeling it and I see it all the time. I'm bringing somebody who is walking proof that when you are a woman of that caliber, the problem is not that you'll never find love or that you need to settle. You just need your right person. So let's bring in Michael and Carly. Hello, welcome. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for
Was that a buildup? Was it worth it?
Oh, it was. You know, and probably only theatrical people will get this, but we're pleased to be here, Masha and Kuligin.
Well, yeah, you don't gravitate towards theatricality at all, Michael Stratford. for the home audience, that's a reference to Shakespeare's home, Stratford upon Avon.
Yes, and that was a chosen name.
Yes.
Actually.
I know. That's why I outed you.
However, numerologically, my original name, it turns out to be exactly the same.
What number?
I don't remember, but I did it at one point and I went, Stratford and this one, and I went, oh, wow, they add up the same. Must be right.
Just oh, wow, that's very letters. Cool. That's yeah. very cool. So how did you two meet?
Why don't you do that? Your version.
Well, the real reason I noticed Michael is because he was dating my coach. When I first started coaching 22 years ago, I got a coach because you got to walk the talk. And I was in Australia, in Sydney, and my coach told me she was dating Michael. And I was like, how can you date someone on the other side of the world? He's in the US in Philadelphia. You're here in Brisbane. I was in Sydney. How does that work? And then there was the International Coaching Federation had their conference in Florida, in the amazingly horrible location called the Greenleaf. It was a golf club and we were all spread out around the golf club. This was in 1999. And Michael was dating this woman. And we were all invited to have dinner together. And so I was observing Michael with women, all of us women. There's like 12 Australian women and Michael. So we were all just studying him, including me. It's like, who is this? And anyway, that's how I met. I could tell you the rest of that, but we didn't get
to. So it's like divinely ordained. You live on the other side of the planet and you're both entangled with other people. And one of them is an especially like complicated entanglement.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. But they broke up that weekend and I noticed their energy was not good on the dance floor. It was not good. Something happened and I ended up meeting in the spa accidentally, sitting between him and her at midnight on the last night, thinking, why am I sitting in the jacuzzi between these two people? And then she gets up and leaves and I say, oh, hi. What did I say to you? I don't remember.
I don't remember the exact words, but we got chatting pretty quickly. And I had to leave for a flight the next morning that was very early, like 6 o'clock. So we chatted there and then we went over to Carly's room and chatted some more because I no longer had a room to stay in. I was...
Smooth, Michael. Write that down.
And we just had a really just wonderful conversation. And that was, you know... One could say that was a start. And then Carly went back to Sydney and I went back to Philadelphia and that was that for a year. And when we met again, we met in the conference in Vancouver. And in Vancouver, I saw her come in down the hall and I went, oh, hi, I was wondering if you were gonna be here. And by that time, Carly, who had been in a relationship, but it completed in between, and I had also completed a relationship. So now we were basically free agents. So we found ways to sort of hang out with each other, bits and pieces here and there, depending on whichever breakout we were going to. Until the night, that Saturday night dance thing again. And Carly, you know, grabbed my hand and said, you're my dance partner.
You're my date.
You're my date for
tonight. You're my date.
And I said, okay. And so we hung out some more. And, you know, we danced for a while.
I think I was at that conference and I would have seen this happening, except I was so self-absorbed in like myself that I didn't notice.
Yeah. And so we talked again late, but then Carly went back to Australia and I went back to Philadelphia, except now we started emailing. Emails and the occasional phone call, and then mostly phone calls. And then we both decided to have a date. And Carly flew in from Sydney to Dana Point, or actually to San Diego, and I flew in from Philadelphia to San Diego, and we met and we had a date in Dana Point. And after the first 3 days, it was just so clear that we decided to extend the date. And Carly came out and hung out with me and back in Philadelphia for a while, for a month.
Yeah.
So
that's a very, very long second date.
It was 1 month.
Yes.
It was a 1 month date.
Yeah, that's an impressive. And did you know that in advance, or was it like, okay, I'm flying out from Australia for like the afternoon on a Tuesday so we can have coffee and then I'll fly back? Or were you like, well, no, I'm coming out for a month?
Yeah, no, we decided I'd come out for a month. And if it didn't work out, I could always get on a plane and go back.
True. They make more flights.
First of all, in Dana Point, and then flew to Philadelphia to meet Michael's son as well. So that was part of it. He came with a twosome, you know, him and his son.
Yeah.
So.
Devin.
Yeah.
Parents typically don't show up alone.
No, well, I did. And Morgana, you do too, don't you?
Yeah.
We don't have the kids. They're the children bringers.
Oh, it's so much easier that way.
I like it. Yeah.
No, so when I got one at Whole Foods, I mean, okay.
It's kind of like you modeled the perfect relationship arc for a year of pandemic.
Yes.
In what way?
For everybody watching at home, you built a relationship slowly over time.
Yeah.
So that when you finally met together, you already had something.
Yeah.
Yes. And I did get challenged by my own coach, who later went to Sydney for our wedding. And he said, in all of America, you couldn't find one woman. You had to get one from Australia.
Yeah.
That was his phrase.
And
I'm planning on an American as my husband. This is my third husband.
Third wife.
I wasn't planning on my third husband being an American and me moving to the United States. That was not at all something I thought of ever.
So I have to ask, was there a point I'm assuming you walk through this sort of like you have this wonderful phone call or however you guys are sort of interacting with each other, where you hang up the phone. I'm assuming one or both of you are saying, oh, this can't be. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm from Sydney. And then at some point you had to say, somebody had to know. And I'm assuming it happened in its own organic, unique way. But was there sort of like a moment like, okay, this was the phone call where I'm like, okay, whether I like it or not, this is the guy or this is the gal and I'm in love, click. Was there a moment for you? Is that too much or too personal to ask?
It's not too personal. I just don't know that the idea that it couldn't work wasn't really in my thought process. Being a kind of romantic and impulsive human being at times, you know, I was just caught up in the experience of it and loving the connection. And that was what was the most important thing. And then there was a moment in the Dana Point place where it just became crystal clear. And we had, I think that was the, message from God moment.
Ooh, say more. Ooh, say more.
Yeah.
Well, it was clear that we wanted to get connected and we wanted to take this relationship further within the first 3 days. It was very open and deep and all of that right away. And we'd laid a lot of groundwork through the emails and conversations. But there were two pieces in it. One was Carly said, I have to know. We both had an unanswered question, really. I have to know that if we get married, that children are a real possibility. Because I've been in a relationship where I was told they were, and they weren't. So I cannot go any further. This was line in the sand time. I cannot go any further if that's not a real possibility. And I said, I have to know that if we have a child, that it is not going to be all about you and the child's relationship, and I'm the third wheel spending his time providing, but that's about it. Because I'd had that in my previous marriage, where it was like, oh, it's her child, even though we had produced it, it's her child, but I'm just kind of an appendage. And so we had that kind of standoff almost, both who's gonna move first. And I think, and I've gotten messages like this before, I think for me, what happened was it was like, a download in the Matrix, from the divine saying, you've been looking for somebody for a long time and even complaining and whining about this. I bring one to you and you're balking. That was the kind of like message that came in. And that's when I said, yeah, okay. You know, and I also connected in that moment with how much I appreciated who I was with. And she had the corresponding start that said, so I said, yes, children are on the table. Absolutely. I would be happy to have a child with you. And she said, I would never think of keeping my husband out of the relationship. It would have to be all of us. So both questions got answered. So then it was just details from there on out. That's my part of the story. Is that accurate?
It's pretty good. Yeah.
That kind of points to the question of, especially since this is both of your third marriages.
Yeah, we had two practice marriages.
Right. What was different by the time you two got together?
Well, I was older.
Yay.
When Michael and I got married, I was 39. So I already had a lot. I mean, it's just different because I had already had two really successful careers. And this was my third, going into coaching. And I was already doing well in Australia. And then Michael came along and I'm going, why would I, I'm going to move to the US. And I just felt like it was my intuition, my heart said this is the right thing to do, even though I was really happy in Sydney and I didn't ever think I'd really leave there. But what's different is I did trust my intuition by that point. I don't think early in my life I trusted myself enough to go, it did feel for me like jumping off the deep end. Because even though I sound like English, Australian English is very different than American English, Australian culture is different than American. And moving here was definitely a challenge. For the first few years was horribly challenging. And I am privileged as a white woman, now I know, with all that's going on. It was still extremely challenging from many discrimination points of view that I experienced. But I knew who I was by then enough. I would say I didn't know all of who I was by then, but I knew enough to be able to go, this is what I want, and I'm willing to dive off and see. And if I fail, hey, what's the worst that can happen? I learn. So I was in that perspective by then, not in my 20s or early 30s.
Yeah, for me, it was, what was different was the amount of work I had done with myself to grow, to shed historical baggage, to process things, and to actually, bottom line, is to get to the place where I not only loved myself, I liked myself. Hmm. And there was a big shift at one point when I recognized that I had no idea who I was in the world without a woman. Mm. And when that one hit me, because I'd been with a woman in some way, shape, or form, the longest was maybe 2 months, you know, since I was a kid. You know, so whether it was 17 and dating a woman for a long time, or a marriage, or a lived together relationship, I was never without a woman. So I had no idea who I was without that. So I consciously, deliberately stopped to find out, who am I without a woman? And I didn't date anyone. I made the decision to go a couple of years. And in the meantime, I was doing a lot of processing, et cetera, and clearing space. And then I got to liking me and appreciating me for who I am and the uniqueness of my design. And so I was no longer trying to get anything completed by someone else. I came into it, and that was something that I think both of us really did, is that we came into it not seeking a missing piece. It wasn't like, oh, you complete me. No, we were both full as human beings, and we were different. But we both honored that difference.
I'm so grateful that you revealed that, even as a life coach of many, many years and a successful person who's done decades of work on yourself, you still, despite outer appearances, deep down had issues around loving yourself.
Yep.
Because I think we all go around with masks of everything is okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing, Michael, the gift that Michael gave me from the very beginning of our relationship was, just as you may already know, uniqueness is a big theme in Michael's existence. Mm. And from the beginning, he just said, I want you to be you. And I was going, I don't, even though I'd done personal development since my mid-20s, so I'd been continuously involved in my own development for that time, I still don't know by that time that I really knew who I didn't know wholly, like Michael said. I don't believe I was that like he was. He's a little older than I am. Maybe it's different, but I still had to own who am I. And then moving to another country where I was a big fish in a little pond called Australia. Now I was a little fish in a huge pond called the United States. And I really had to start again from it. My identity was very much tied up with I love earning money. I love being independent. I love having my own stuff. I love being a contributor to a relationship financially, emotionally, socially. And here all of a sudden I was reliant financially because of the way the system works in the United States when you immigrate. I had no credit. I couldn't buy anything. I had property in Australia. I had all this, and yet I had nothing here. And it was a big challenge to not only love myself, I think, but be okay with being dependent on someone else, which I'd never been really in my life.
He couldn't love you for all these externals because you couldn't bring them.
Right. Well, I couldn't bring them.
Right.
I couldn't bring those. Yeah.
And it sounds like some kind of extremist life coach exercise of like stripping you of everything you've ever defined yourself with.
Take it all and I'll have a bring 5 suitcases to the United States and here we go. By the way, you'll love this. I'll just tell you this. Before I met Michael, I went, you know what? I don't care if I meet another man or not. I am buying the house furniture of my dreams. I bought all this beautiful Italian furniture, this amazing dinnerware, everything I wanted. Some of it was still on order when Michael and I got married. It was taking that long. But I think that was part of it. I just went, I want this for me. Mm-hmm. And then he shows up and I go, I don't even have the lounge suite I ordered from Italy yet. Hasn't arrived.
And out of the whole transfer, what we have is some really beautiful Italian tableware.
I brought it over.
I saw. It's yellow. It's very pretty.
Did you, Carly, have sort of like friends in the U.S. in terms of like a support system? And how, was this all sort of just like you two kids against the world?
Yeah, well, being a coach already and having trained with Coach U in Australia and who were international and United States based, I already had some colleagues, and Michael was in that realm. He was in there as well. But I didn't know anybody other than a few of those coaches. And then I got some clients because of that. And that was it. I knew nobody except who I knew within I was brand new to coaching even still. I started coaching in 1998, and Michael and I met in 99, end of 99, and then we got married in 2001. That's another story, because 9/11 came into our marriage situation as well. But nobody, it was a start. It was a brand new.
Yes, it was.
Welcome to our country. And then we had 9/11.
I'm an American citizen. I have been for 11 years. But
wow.
Yes, it was a huge challenge for Carly that was laid out for her. You know, there wasn't, you know, as she said, while there are colleagues and peers that she might be able to talk with on the phone, the physical presence of someone else was not there. There was no physical friend, you know, because they were scattered all over. It's not like, oh, yeah, I know you. You're in New Jersey. Let's just go say hi. You know, that wasn't there. So that was a big, big challenge that Carly weathered. And
how were you able to help Carly? And Carly, how did you get through it?
Well, I think this is where shared values come in, is respect. And Michael really held that place of, I think maturity helped with that too, for both of us, knowing that I had enough failures in my life with so many things that I knew every time I picked myself up. So the worst that could do is I'd fall down and skin my knees if something wasn't going well. But I think we discovered a lot of shared values, because we really didn't know how compatible we really would be. This was a gamble, really, to move countries and go, is this going to work? Because I know other friends of mine who it's not worked, marrying somebody, moving countries. But you know, respect, caring, kindness, compassion, empathy, love, just really love, love, love. I always felt Michael was completely holding me in wholeness and in love. So when I'm in my freaking out, which often happened a lot, in those first couple of years, he was just a steady rock of love. That's at least for me.
Yeah. I think the shared values is a key thing. And there is always a respect for the difference of us, mm-hmm. which is both one of the really sweet elements of the coaching profession, which is the honoring and valuing and respecting difference, rather than trying to have the other person become the thing you want to mold them into that is the same. And that's just huge, because that takes a whole lot of friction out of the engagement, you know. And for me, I could see who Carly was. I could see that the circumstances were not who Carly was. Mm. And I could also see that the reactions to the circumstances were not who Carly was. I knew I had a gem, and that was already shown to me in the previous exchanges and emails and the time we'd spent together. So it was just about keeping space for that, you know. And what I had wanted was I wanted someone who was, you know, and there may have been the vestigial tale of this early issue of abandonment that still every now and again reared its head. Because, you know, somewhere along the line in my life, I had this crazed notion based on some experiences I interpreted and came up with this magical conclusion that everybody on the planet was designed to abandon me, as if they had nothing better to do in their life.
And it was a focus.
It was a focus. And so one of the things in my background, kind of swirling in the undercurrent, was wanting someone who would want me for who I was. That I didn't have to put on airs or be someone else, that I could just be me. And they would want that. And here I found that. And that was huge for me. It was just huge. She not only saw it and appreciated it, she wanted that. And that allowed me to be me easily without any friction or having to monitor and manage my behavior, which by giving me that space, it allowed me to give her that space as well. Mm-hmm. And so that was really, really important. And the values overlap. That's just huge. But respect and honoring, those are key.
You said something that really touched me that I think is also really, if people watching or listening take nothing else away, that your partner is not her circumstances, that you could see who she is without getting caught, because there's drama and there are circumstances and we aren't always behaving our best. And to see and choose and love who somebody is and make that distinction, see that, that I think, wow, that is the biggest gift in the world.
I think from that, you can start moving into the place of it's not on purpose. So when somebody has a bad day or whatever, because that's part of the thing. In other words, yeah. You know, my relationship with Morgana has a multitude of wonderful facets. And then I'm a flawed guy running around. So she has to, on some level, deal with it. And she gets to know that it's not, do you know what I mean? She's not, it's not, I'm not plotting out a path to annoy her. It's just like, okay, this is, Devin's having a moment. He needs a breather or whatever, right? But I think that's kind of what you guys are describing, is that from this understanding of how we evolve as people, that these certain core beliefs and circumstances sometimes prevail. You know, sometimes, you know, I think certainly in the world that we're in right now, I think there's, I read somewhere just recently where there's a lot of couples that are not doing well. And I think it has a lot to do with just sort of this kind of extended circumstance that's truly beyond anybody's comprehension from any, you know, particular point in the past. And you guys kind of went through it to some degree, you know, already, which I find amazing that you just kept fighting for, because that's what you did, was, is that you fought for love, mm-hmm. which is, I think, ultimately, you know, I speak to a lot of people, I'm sure you do as well, where the idea is like, love is right here. And people want to back away from their relationship because of these, there's some reasons. And sometimes the reasons are very valid and important. And sometimes it's just these little things that they start backing away from love. And all of a sudden there's a chasm between two people who otherwise would still be in love with each other.
And I think that background of love that you mentioned was really crucial for me, in that it changes the dynamic of the relationship in some really interesting ways. One of them was when I would have an argument or a fight with my partner previous to this relationship without that background of love, the added component in there was, is this going to be the one that breaks us up? The fear that it was going to, like, the anxiety that it was going to be. And so that came into the mix and exacerbated the dialogue, because now, you know, I would compromise being myself, or I would, you know, go into, and that wasn't there. You know, when we fought or argued, there was no sense that, oh, this is going to be a breakup argument.
It's a really long way to go back to Sydney
Right. And you'd already moved furniture, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exhausting.
It's really, one of my girlfriend's houses. I had no breath.
Yeah. So someone who wants you, Michael, for you, she gave up everything, including Italian furniture for you.
Yes.
Including Italian furniture. That's
big.
That's
a sign.
That is big.
Yes. And it was interesting, the aspect of the fighting piece, because it was something my son noticed. And he was 15, 16, I think, right around there. And he said, you know, I watch you two and you guys fight, but then it's gone. And that was a surprise to him. It was a surprise that he says, you guys don't stay angry with each other for very long. And that was something that later on he wanted in his relationships as well. But it was just to have that observation, I thought was telling as well.
I think it's actually a brilliant observation for a 15-year-old to be seeing that, yeah. You know, and then wanting it for himself, which I think is actually sort of a beautiful thing. Because I think that's what really, you know, I think that's what the goal is that we don't hold on to things. And I think a lot of the reasons why you brought up the magic word, which is fear. And I think we get into that place. It's very easy to find a place where, you know, okay, we're not getting along in this moment. So now I'm going to make a list of all the things because I need to bolster up my fear of, you know what I mean? The fear of losing what I have or not getting the thing that I think I deserve. And it's tricky stuff.
Yeah, that's not fighting fair. In fact, if one of us does it, okay, stop it. The kitchen sink belongs in the kitchen.
Yes.
Not everything. It's like, let's deal with this. And to be honest, we don't fight that much because we hate disconnection. Mm-hmm. And so the value of connection is so strong for us that anytime we have an upset, it's like, oh, this feels so bad. We just can't stand it. Both of us dislike it so intensely as a feeling and a visceral feeling as well.
It's painful. Mm-hmm. It's actually more painful than the upset about being wrong in a disagreement. It's more painful, that disconnection, than the upset about being wrong. It's like, okay, screw it, I'm wrong. I just don't want to be disconnected anymore.
Right. It's actually sort of, I think you bring up a really great point about these ideas. I think what happens frequently, you know, in just because we're different, you know, in other words, we're in a relationship and we're just different people, different sets of experiences and circumstances. And it's easy to say, well, I'm taking all of my collective information, which is very important. And I'm going to put the label of right across it. While my wife or somebody else will do a similar kind of thing and they're right too. And then we have these sort of competing ideas of right and wrong. And if I'm right, how could you be right as well?
Yes.
So these ideas of being right and being wrong are sort of, you know, I think they're just some of the general ideas that are part of our culture, but don't actually ever serve the relationship.
Right. Yeah. Well said.
So speaking of connection, I believe the two of you have a daily practice that we were discussing earlier.
Yes, we do.
Would you like to share that?
How about you?
Well, one of the things, first of all, play, as you would imagine too, knowing Michael, if you do, is very important. We both are very playful.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I like to do is I like physicality. And what we found is that we actually do well walking and talking. And so one of the things we've developed as a practice is every night after dinner, we go for a walk and we count bunny rabbits. And it's something that gets us out to walking. And maybe we do it. Michael does it more often than me because he goes out maybe in the morning. I don't. I'm working. I go in the afternoon and evening. My walks with him, but we count rabbits and it's just always fun to look. We go the same track, the same way. we've got names for all the houses and all the names of the properties where these rabbits could be, bunny rabbits, and we love counting them every night. It's just fun.
Yeah. And I'll do it sometimes three times a day. And Carly sometimes the days work out that we can do that together. And it's really quite a wonderful thing, but it has us just being with each other and being outside and being in a space that is not full of every other part of our day. Mm. That being outside, and we're fortunate enough to have an area where we can do that, yeah, without a whole lot of people. And you know, we're very mask conscious when we go out because we are. And so what happens is that we go out, and as she said, you know, we're looking for the bunnies and where they're going to show themselves, and we'll chat with them as we go by. You know, hi, nice to see you. Oh, look, you know, party of four. You know, dining at the Oval, great, in the cul-de-sac. You know, we'll see that. You know, we have, as she said, we have these wonderful names for it. I mean, there's the Twin Pines House, and then there's the Happy Hour Corner, and the Mansion, and all of that. But it gives us something that is connecting, but it's not just a download space of our emptying out our day. Not that sometimes that conversation doesn't happen, it does, but it's mostly a being with the sky, the stars, the creatures, you know. And every now and again, there's a cat or a squirrel. So we just, you know.
Do you count those as well?
Sometimes, yes. We don't count crows. Crows don't count.
There's just too many of those.
Gotcha.
Cats.
Yes.
Squirrels. Dogs don't count either because they're on leashes. So cats, if their cats are not on leashes, they are, we go, why? Why? Why are you out here? Where do you belong? Go home. This is not safe for you out here. Do not stay out at night. Go home.
And one of our favorite experiences is what we call surprise bunnies. Surprise bunnies are when we see a bunny in a location we haven't seen them before. It's like, I didn't expect you there.
He talks to all of them. He does. Every one of them, he stops and talks to the bunny rabbits.
Well, I'm born in Year of the Rabbit, so I have to.
Family.
It's family, yes, of course. It's family. You know, and the other thing is how surprised we get ourselves, because we'll be walking down, looking on the hill for the bunnies, or looking over here at the park lawn. And then there'll be one sitting in the road in front of us that we almost bump into. And we get to enjoy that as well.
Yeah.
It's just sweet.
Well, I love that you're also demonstrating a connection exercise that isn't one of those heavy, high pressure, look into each other's eyes and like do crap.
Exactly. We actually have another connection practice, which happens quite frequently. We both like sport. Carly loves it even more than I do. And we often will sit in the lounge and, you know, she's on one and I'm on another, and we'll watch something and we'll just
sleep.
And we'll go to sleep together, you know, on these separate lounges watching something like golf or, you know, it doesn't matter.
How do you
sleep
through that? Right.
That's sleep worthy.
I'm sleeping through Chopped right now, and I hate that because I love Chopped. I can't watch a food network program right now without falling asleep.
But we
love that because isn't it nice? Do you find that falling asleep in the lounge room on our separate lounges, there's something very intimate about that, even though we are apart, we're on separate lounges. I don't know, something very sweet and innocent about it that we both love.
Yeah, and one will wake up sometimes before the other and we'll look across and go,
Well, you're just being with each other, like you don't have to perform.
Yeah.
That's really something that's been really important for us, especially in later years, is just we don't need a whole lot of excitement anymore.
External
things. Yeah. The richness of noticing a hummingbird going into our honeysuckle plant, or just, you know, the silence of the night or something like that. It's just, we've come to really appreciate simplicity much more. So it kind of deepens our experience of life without it having to be constantly stimulated, which is great.
Doesn't have to be dramatic.
No, we're pretty low drama. You know, we like, we have another principle. We like to make things easy for each other. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So is that how midlife love is better?
So it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier because we're not wrestling with all of the stuff that we used to contend with. The absence of knowing who we are and trying to try and work it out through the other person, or get all this, get all of our unmet needs met by the other person, so that if we don't get it, then we're like starving for it. You know, it's just simpler and easier, and it makes it sweeter.
And I think having, again, lucked out with neither of us need a lot of stuff to feel good. So yeah. I don't spend a lot of money. I don't need a lot of things. He doesn't need a lot of things. We don't. So we, again, there's just not a lot of stress around finances, which I think a lot of couples, no matter what age, have a lot of that going on. But we're very, very aligned on how we view money. And also with respect, he has his office. Although we do have the same chairs, that's about it. Our office is like, if you see, this is, we're in my office. I have a bright yellow wall here. But if you go into Michael's office, he's got a bright blue wall. And so we've each have our own personalities. And I've got a, you know, leopard chair over there, leopard skin, a cloth chair. So we individually have our own personalities. Mm-hmm. And we respect that. And I feel like that's what makes love easier at this age, is being okay with, she can have her stuff, he can have his stuff. But we don't need a lot of stuff. We can express in our own rooms, but we don't need to, you know, just don't need a lot of stuff.
And we made a rule for the, what one might call the common rooms, which is nothing goes in there that we both don't love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a compromise. It's, oh, I'm okay with that. We've had walls that were bare for 2 years without something until we found a piece of art that we wanted on it.
Yeah.
You know, because we realized that we didn't want to have the experience of walking into the room and going, oh, I freaking hate that painting. You know, and the other person's going, oh, I love that painting. We save that experience for our separate offices. Our own personal taste in our own separate offices. But out there, we have to both love it or it doesn't come in.
Yeah. Having separate space really helps.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That honors the difference. Mm-hmm. You know?
I want it because we're not quite all out of time, but we're closing in on it. And I wanted to ask you more about, you are doing an international event. Is it okay to kind of ask about what you're doing? Because it's kind of really cool.
Well, it is the one way to describe it is that it is the first personal and professional development, real life role-playing game over the course of 7 months. And it's called Million Quest. And Million Quest definition is to positively affect the lives of 1 million people. That's what the participants are going to be challenged with. So we have created a world wherein people will be facing challenges that are the kind that someone will face outside in the world when they go to pursue their million quest in real life. But it's a gamified world. And so they're going to be traipsing around in a 10,000 square foot space with these village pieces and costumes and things like that, facing challenges like the avalanche of assumptions or the demons of doubt and things like that. So that we're trying to support people in up-leveling their self-mastery in what we call seven realms. You know, so it's Million Quest, quest for self-mastery, with the idea that once people level themselves up in their self-mastery, they can then more easily play the game of self-transcendence, wherein it is not about you anymore. It's about how you contribute to the world, how you interact with the world, and what can happen there. And it's a collective endeavor. And it's happening first in China, which is awesome because there's such a rich culture of both fantasy and consciousness and empowerment. And so this is a project for me that's been 20 years in the making. And it's finally coming to fruition. And Morgana's part of it, mm-hmm. which is very exciting for me. She's connected me with another person who's part of it, who connected me with another person who's part of it. So it's quite a very special project. Thank you for asking. I really appreciate that. I've been training coaches in China since 2014.
And they're probably starving for this type of learning and self-exploration.
It is like being at the beginning of the coaching world, you know, like 29 years ago, 30 years ago. The enthusiasm, the desire to support. And it's all integrating well because it is about respecting the difference so that it can contribute to the collective more powerfully.
This is what I'm looking forward to the most in 2021. I'm so excited about this. We are in our final seconds. So I love you both. I appreciate you both. Thank you for like all these wisdom bombs that you just dropped on us. This is Crazy Sexy Midlife Love Radio. We will be back next week at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Go to crazysexymidlifelove.com for Devin's ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men.
Because they are.
And to join our love family. Thank you so much. Mwah.
Thanks for having us and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.